sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good Tuesday afternoon, everybody. Great to have you with us on the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Penn State basketball tonight, Minnesota, with a 7 o'clock tip-off in the Bryce Jordan Center. It is the first time in a month that Penn State has played a game in the Jordan Center. The last time the Nittany Lions played a game in the Jordan Center was December 5th against Eastern Michigan. They've had two other home games since. They're both in Rec Hall on the 10th and the 12th. They haven't played in the Jordan Center since December 5th, exactly 1 month. Minnesota comes in 6-8 tonight. They're 0-2 in the conference. And this is a big game for both teams because somebody tonight is going to break through in this game. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. 7 degrees here this morning when we all woke up. 7 degrees, far cry from the 60 degrees we had on Christmas Day as winter's finally hit us here. Last night, a classic triple overtime game, number one versus number two. Kansas won the game 109-106 in three overtimes over Oklahoma. Kansas had come in number one in the writers' poll. Oklahoma had come in number one in the coaches' poll. They both played like number one teams last night at Fog Allen Fieldhouse in Lawrence. In the end, Kansas won it. It's the first time you've had split number ones go head-to-head since 2008 when Ohio State beat Wisconsin 49-48. It's also the first time number one and number two have gone into overtime since the unbelievable classic between NC State and UCLA where David Thompson and NC State beat Bill Walton and UCLA in 1974 in double overtime. I think it was in Greensboro, as a matter of fact, where they played that game in the semifinals of the NCAA tournament. Then NC State went on to win the national championship for Norm Sloan. Was it David Thompson, Tom Burleson, Monty Tau? Who else was on that team? Tim Stoddard, the Orioles pitcher, was the starting forward on that team. Great basketball team. David Thompson was Michael Jordan before Michael Jordan. David Thompson was an unbelievable basketball player. Coming up in the second half hour of the show today, Pro Football Hall of Famer Bobby Bell, one of the true greats. He played in the first Super Bowl. He played in the fourth Super Bowl, which the Chiefs won. He was the Outland Trophy winner. He finished third in the Heisman. He helped lead Minnesota to a national championship. Unbelievable player, great athlete, one of the true greats. Bobby Bell will join us at 3:35 today. More on News Radio 1070 WKOK after this. Welcome back, and of course, today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. I am in the Sunbury Motors studio. Bobby Bell, the Hall of Famer, College and Pro Football Hall of Famer, in the next half hour. There aren't many guys you can pull aside and say, you know, you played in the first Super Bowl. Super Bowl 50 is coming up. Super Bowl 50 is coming up on February 7th. And Bobby Bell played in the first one, which they lost to the Packers 35-10. But then he played in Super Bowl IV, which they beat the Vikings 23-7. And he is still anchored in the Kansas City area and a great, great player. There are certain players, that outside linebacking position, obviously Jack Ham set a standard. Lawrence Taylor changed it up a bit. But in a lot of ways, Bobby Bell was Lawrence Taylor before Lawrence Taylor. It's amazing when you go through the history of sports. We always do this day in sports history, which we'll be doing at 3:35. We talk about the history of sports, and I think there is such a desperation on the part of people today to say, oh, greatest game ever, like we just watched it because it's in present time. Greatest player ever, you know, like we just watched it in present time. So that our era has a greatest. Every era has a greatest, And there are people that come along before we get to certain individuals. There was a Lawrence Taylor before a Lawrence Taylor. It was Bobby Bell. There's nobody that plays the game at outside linebacker the way Jack Ham did. Nobody. But Bobby Bell was originally an end, and then they said, look, we'll just put you in linebacker, and you can rush from the linebacker spot. And he did, and he was outstanding at it. Great athlete. He also was a long snapper. And I will slip in that little tidbit to him and see how he reacts when we talk to him about long snapping in the NFL. One of the reasons on this show that I don't speculate normally is what happened in Indianapolis. You always go through the Black Monday. Who's coming? Who's going? Well, here's the list of guys. They're going. I mean, there's no doubt. Who was the first name put out there in the last month that was absolutely out on Black Monday in the NFL? Chuck Pagano. Who got a four-year contract extension last night from the Indianapolis Colts? Chuck Pagano. That's why I don't like idle speculation. As much as it drives these shows and makes them go, and I know it frustrates Kevin that I don't get into idle speculation that much, I think most of idle speculation is just worthless conversation that fills up airtime and brings no purpose whatsoever to what's going on in the show. And that's always been me. I've always taken that. I'm not big on idle speculation. Tom Coughlin did step down yesterday as the head coach of the New York Giants. Tom Coughlin, a great coach, 12 years, two Super Bowl championships. Look what he did with Jacksonville, taking an expansion team, and he got them to the AFC Championship game on two different occasions. Great coach. Great coach. You know, and I only met him one time. It was at a combine here at Penn State, and Joe Paterno wanted to, he found out that Tom was here, and Joe wanted to talk with him, and so they said, hey, Steve, can you go get Tom Coughlin and bring him up? I said, sure. And Tom Coughlin began as a high school coach in Waterloo, New York. And that made it easier for me to talk to him as we walked back because I said, you know, my grandparents lived in Waterloo, New York. I've been there many, many times. And, of course, you know, that just sparks a conversation right away. And just a really great guy. Wrote a book on leadership. I think it's a book that people should take the time to read. Those who want to be in positions where you make decisions, the ones I've always been around always have wanted to read the thoughts of other leaders along the way. For example, I mentioned Joe Paterno earlier. I remember Joe Paterno at one point reading Churchill because Churchill had gone through so much during World War II, doubted by many at so many different times. How did he survive it? What was his thought process? What was he thinking? I know the last book he was reading about, the last time I talked to him about a month before he passed away, he told me he was reading a book about Harry Truman. He always was reading about leaders all the time. And you know, along the way, I've done a little bit of that myself, reading about leaders, what makes them tick, what makes them think. Tom Coughlin wrote a book, same thing, about leadership and how you go, you know, and your thought process about how do you handle the great times? How do you handle the mediocre times? How do you handle the bad times? How do you keep spirits up? When do you need to kick it into another gear? All of those things that he talks about in the book, and I think he wrote the book right after the second Super Bowl win in 2011, the 2011 season, 2012. The book came out, I think, in the spring of 2012. Check it out online and read about leadership because great leaders have to make very tough decisions along the way. Great leaders have to have the ability to see the big picture. Great leaders have to have the ability to take short-term and make it into long-term. And Tom Coughlin was able to do that and was a great, great coach for the New York Giants. Yeah, they didn't make the playoffs the last 4 years. But you know what? Winning a Super Bowl is really, really hard. And the Giants were doubted in both of those years. And Tom Coughlin, who ended up with three Super Bowl titles in his career because he also picked up one as an assistant coach with the Giants, very, very important. Had done a great job turning around Boston College. Then what he did with Jacksonville was remarkable. what he did with the Jags was remarkable. An expansion team got the two AFC, got to a couple of AFC championship games, including one his second year there. His second year had him in the AFC championship game. Amazing. Mike McCoy was supposed to be out at San Diego. Nope, he's staying. Again, I just don't like idle speculation. I don't mind analyzing where a team happens to be at a particular time. And if it's obvious somebody is just flat out not getting the job done, okay, I can go there. I have no problem with that. But I want to look at the circumstances. I want to look at the big picture. And that's what I've tried to talk about on this show many, many times, is the big picture. Where do things fit? I've done this with Penn State football. I've talked about the big picture with James Franklin many times. There are layers to what we've seen in this along the way. And I did some comparison to USC. USC is coming off an 8-6 year, an 8-5 year. Is that what they ended up this year? And that's where they are. I guess 8-6 because they played in the Pac-12 championship game. But they ended up with an 8-6 year. They're trying to work their way out of sanctions as well. And I think it's a tribute actually to Penn State and USC and the strength of the two programs, that both of them have been on over 500 the entire time. There are deep layers that go to this that go beyond the surface of what we're talking about. I completely understand, without a doubt, to borrow Jack Ham's phrase, okay, I completely understand the week-by-week evaluation of what you see in the football field. Completely understand. Because you're watching the game. You're thinking about how things can be better. You're trying to think about what would improve Penn State. Completely understand that. But these are not excuses when you sit there and talk about the big picture. They're reality. And that's why I try to take the time on the show to discuss the reality of what is going on and where they're going. Has progress been made here? No doubt progress has been made here. But it's not fast enough for everybody, and especially James Franklin. It's not fast enough for him. He's had to make tough decisions along the way. This goes back to the leadership that we were talking about earlier. Tough decisions that you have to make along the way. I think he's made the right decisions. I think he's made big picture decisions that are going to eventually pay dividends. Now, we won't find out until the dividends start to come in. But I think that he has made very tough decisions where he has been able to eschew the short-term gratification of maybe making a move that could steal a game for you, instead going for the big picture that will make the program really strong down the road. Is Penn State closer now to positional balance on the roster? A little bit. Is Penn State closer now to class balance? A little bit. I mean, you're going to be a little bit top-heavy in a couple of classes coming up here down the road because you had to play catch-up so quickly. And that's what Penn State's been doing in recruiting. They've been playing catch-up. I mean, again, as I pointed out many times, how do you have 50 scholarships and then suddenly you're up to 77? Shouldn't 50 scholarships put you way over 85 in 2 years? Whoa. If it gets you to 77, it tells you how far behind you've been. Also, the fact that 2016 will be the first time since the 2011 season that Penn State will have 85 scholarships. Again, think about that. 2016 is the first time since 2011 that Penn State will have 85 scholarships on the field. That is the next part, the next check mark along the way among the embedded situation that Penn State's had to go through. You know, embedded in the fact that each of the last 2 years they found out very late they had 5 extra scholarships each year. That's an embedded problem. Now this year they don't have to even think about that or worry about that. That's behind them. Remember that we're sitting here, 17 months ago, and we didn't know Penn State would be eligible for bowl games. Well, now they are. Boom, 2 more check marks right there. You know, they went from 2-6 in the Big Ten to 4-4 in the Big Ten this year. They won 7 games just like they did the year before, but they ended up 4-4 in the conference. Now, didn't win the bowl game this year, but I think played a better team this year in Georgia. And I think now you're seeing the opportunity here of Penn State turning this all-important corner as these the embedded part of the sanctions, you know, that run just deeper than people realize, now starting to get check marks. Scholarship kickers are going to be signed this year by Penn State. They can do that because now they have the numbers to do it, and they've also had the time to recruit them during the course of the past summer. That's the important part. When you're trying to play catch-up on numbers, you sit there, and again, you didn't know you had five extra scholarships until very late each of the last 2 years, so that's why you bypassed a kicker, because the other 20 you needed to really fill spots, and by the time you find out you have five extras, the guys you really want to get in as a kicker, they're already gone, because there aren't, you know, there's not a deep pool of them out there. Well, this time, they already knew what the numbers happened to be as they went into the recruiting cycle, thus they recruited kickers. And now it's allowed them to make a step closer to positional balance. Trace McSorley stepped in and played really well on Saturday. Really, really well. Tommy Stevens is really good, too. Tommy Stevens came in, you watch him in the spring, again, you know, early entrant, ran, excellent runner, threw the ball okay. But by about midseason, you start watching him throw the football, Tommy can throw. Tommy's got a really good arm. He did not remove the redshirt tag from Irvin Charles and Juwan Johnson. He did not remove the redshirt tag from Ryan Bates and Steven Gonzalez. I'll tell you, Sterling Jenkins came on too. There was no thought of taking the redshirt off of him. But Sterling Jenkins, from mid-October on, I was talking to him about this Friday, about the fact that he's come on at that offensive tackle spot. Aaron Monroe is another guy. Garrett Taylor, Ryan Buchholz, Cam Carter. There are certain guys, you like Sharif Miller got a lot better. I mean, on and on, these list of guys, which there was a temptation to take the red shirt off of them, but they didn't do it. And I think it takes a lot of guts to sit there and say, you know what, I'm going to eschew short-term gratification to maybe steal a game, because long-term for my program and the overall health of the program that's going to make us better 5, 6, 7, 8 years down the road, it's the right move. Okay? Short-term versus long-term. James Franklin's looking at the big picture. That's leadership. News bottom of the hour, then Bobby Bell coming up next here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us on this Tuesday. Nittany Lion basketball tonight in the Jordan Center when they take on Minnesota. It'll be the first time Penn State's played in the BJC in a month. Last time they played there was December 5th when they played Eastern Michigan. They played the two games in Rec Hall against Canisius and Louisiana Monroe, and they've been on the road since. I mean, it had been nothing but road games until they play Minnesota tonight in the Big Ten home opener at the Jordan Center at 7. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for this day in sports history. In 1920, the New York Yankees purchased George Herman Babe Ruth from the Boston Red Sox for $125,000. Harry Frazee was the owner of the Red Sox. He wanted to put money into a play, no-no Nanette. So he took the cash from the Yankees and gave them Babe Ruth. Dan Shaughnessy has turned it, from the Boston Globe, has turned it into his own personal franchise, The Curse of the Bambino, which after 86 years finally was lifted in 2004, then 2007, and then 2013. So the Red Sox finally, with three championships in 4, 7, and 13, finally have put, quote, the curse of the Bambino behind them. All right. 1927, a three-day public hearing began on charges of four Major League Baseball teams played between games between Chicago and Detroit on September 2nd and 3rd, 1917, had been thrown. How about that? 1983, Wayne Gretzky of the Edmonton Oilers scored his 100th point of the season. He achieved his 100th point in only his 42nd game of the year. He ended up with 212 points that year. Also in 1993, Mike Ditka was fired as the head coach of the Chicago Bears. It's almost sacrilege that they would do that to him. All right. He's one of the truly great players in the history of the game. When he was at the University of Minnesota, he came out of Shelby, North Carolina. University of Minnesota, he helped lead Bernie Bierman's team to a national championship in 1960. He was part of that Rose Bowl team in 1962. He won the Outland Trophy at Minnesota. He finished third in the Heisman Trophy balloting. Amazing for a defensive player. Then Bobby Bell went on to the AFL. He could have gone to the NFL, but he went to the AFL. And then he played in the first Super Bowl against the Green Bay Packers. The Packers won it 35-10. Bell and the Chiefs became the first ever non-division winner. Can't really call them a wild card technically, but they were. The AFL expanded their playoffs in 1969 to include non-division winners, and it turned out that Houston and Kansas City were the second-place teams in their divisions, and the Chiefs beat the Jets to dethrone them and then beat the Oakland Raiders in Oakland and then won the Super Bowl over Minnesota 23-7. Bobby Bell has gone on to be in the College Football Hall of Fame and the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He was, in many ways, Lawrence Taylor before Lawrence Taylor. And it's our privilege to bring in the great Hall of Famer, Bobby Bell. Welcome to the show. It is great to have you with us.
Hey, good to be here, man. Good cold day here.
same story here, without question. First of all, you had a choice when you came out. You were drafted by both the NFL and the AFL. What was it in the end that swung you to going with Kansas City?
Well, you know, I guess it goes back to Lamar Hunt, you know. And, you know, he just started the AFL.
Yeah.
And when he came to Minnesota, he's the only guy that I talked to. And what he said was that, hey, Bobby, I just want you to be part of my family. And I'm starting a new league. And I just wanted you to be part of it. And I didn't find out till later that he was really upset because Minnesota Vikings drafted me third round. I also got drafted by Montreal, I think it was, up in Canada. And then I had three places I could go to. And what I ended up doing is that Lamar is the one that convinced me that he's going to be around for a while. And Minnesota gave me a one-year contract and stuff, you know, and I was looking for something, you know, some security, you know, and Lamar gave it to me, and I ended up going down with Lamar, and I found out later that Lamar was upset with Minnesota. He was going to let me sign with Minnesota regardless what it, you know, the offer, because if you go back, Lamar was supposed to get the franchise in Minnesota.
That's right.
At the last minute, the owner decided that, hey, what's this 28-year-old guy going to do to own a team? We're not going to do it. And a week before they announced it, they gave it to somebody else. And I was glad that they decided that.
Right.
I wouldn't end up in Kansas City. But, you know, my first contract was Dallas, Texas. That's what I read on my contract because when he came up there, it was Dallas, Texas.
Yep, they were the Dallas Texans, and then they moved, to Kansas City in 63.
Yeah.
You played in what was called the first NFL-AFL championship game of the Coliseum, and then played eventually in Super Bowl IV. You won the second one. The first one, of course, Green Bay won.
What was the, just the difference in maturity of the Kansas City Chiefs between that first one and the fourth one?
Well, I think we had players had played at least 3 or 4 years more. I mean, we had that up on our belt. But I think the first Super Bowl, we were a young team, and we realized that the Green Bay Packers was a veteran team, that we couldn't make no mistakes, and that's what killed us in that first one. And coming back for the second Super Bowl that we played, which was the fourth Super Bowl, we had matured a lot, plus the fact we had a great defense that year. Oh, yeah. And people don't realize that we was a wild card going into that Super Bowl because of, we lost Lenny Dawson for 7 games. Mike Livingston was a quarterback. And we told the offense, hey, man, you guys score 6 points. Kick 2 field goals or something. You know, we didn't think nobody could score on us that year. And we felt we had the best defense going that year. And we won 7 games without Lenny. Mike Livingston was the quarterback. Okay. And Oakland Raiders beat us twice that year.
And then we went out to Oakland and beat them in the championship game.
Right, because we ended up going to New York. The Jets were thinking they was going to go
right
back out to Oakland and back to the Super Bowl for the second year in a row, see? Okay. And we knocked the Jets off. And he went out to Oakland, you know, and we said, no way these guys are going to beat us 3 times.
Yeah, you guys gave up a total of 20 points in 3 playoff games. I think it was 6 to the Jets, 7 to the Raiders, and 7 to the Vikings, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and we felt we had the best defense in the country at that time.
Oh.
And, you know, and Minnesota thought they had the purple people eaters and all that stuff, you know. Yeah.
You had Willie Lanier, Jimmy Lynch, Buck Buchanan, Curly Culp, Jerry Mays, Jerry Robinson. How am I doing? Am I hitting?
Oh, you got him. Aaron Brown. Oh. Emmett Thomas.
Emmett Thomas, unbelievable corner.
Oh, my God. Corner. Jimmy Marcellus, you know, which was Johnny Robinson. We had nothing but coaches on our team, man. Yeah. We had 11 guys that we put on the field defensive-wise, and we would not change not one player. And if they come out there with a spread offense, we call it a spread, you know, and they call it West Coast and all that stuff. We took the same players on defense and play it. Yeah. I mean, I was a linebacker. I came in as a defensive end, you know.
Right.
And the coach came up and said, well, we're going to change it a little bit. We're going down 3-front-front, push Curly Culp over the head, you know, move Buck over Jerry Mays at the end. He said, you go back and play linebacker. I said, oh, really?
Yeah.
And they didn't know, man. We was inside, outside, you know. And the stuff that Lawrence Taylor was doing, I was doing it like, way before he got
absolutely
out,
you know? 78 off the edge. That was you on the attack. Not only that, but as great a two-way linebacker as you were, and I mean, could play the run, could rush the pass, or could play the pass. The most fascinating thing I found out, but I remember watching you play. You long snapped. When did that come up? When did he come up to say, I would like you to snap here to snap it back to Lenny and have Jan kick it?
Well, what happened is that we was out, I think we was playing Oakland one. It was like, I don't know, was it my third? It might have been my second year, or maybe my third year. It might have been my second or third year. I can't remember exactly. But we was out in Oakland, and E.J. Holler was the center, you know.
Right.
And he was snapping the ball for the punch and the field goals and stuff. And we was out there, and I'm sitting on the bench. He came up, oh, my gosh, man, I'm tired. And I said, what's wrong with you, man? He said, I'm tired, man. This is killing me out here. I said, oh, man. I said, that's all right. I said, I'll snap it for you. Because I did it in college, see. Right. It was easy to me, you know. Right. It was a natural for me. I was a quarterback, you know, and I said, hey, I can snap the ball between my legs.
Yeah.
So I was in college and I snapped the ball. So I ran on the field, and the first thing that Gerald Wilson did, you know, he's up in front counting everybody.
Yeah.
He goes, what the heck you doing out here? He started calling timeout because he wanted EJ or somebody. I man, you can't mess up, man. I said, oh, Gerald, get back. Tell me what leg you want it on. He said, I want it on my right leg, my thigh. I said, get back there. He almost dropped the ball. I bullied it back there. Boom. And the nice thing about it, they didn't block EJ. They wouldn't block him. They didn't block me.
Right.
I snapped the ball. Nobody in front of me. Yeah. I took off down the field. I made the tackle. And I did that twice, I think. Three times in the game. I said, I'll take it. I said, nobody's blocking me.
Yeah.
And the coaches up there trying to figure out where I came from. They thought I was an end that came down and made the play.
I thought you came off the sidelines. Hey, the Gridiron Greats Assistance Fund, how important is that so people are aware of this, especially in cooperation with Pork Rind Appreciation Day?
Well, the thing is that the Great Iron Great Assistance Fund is a fund that Mike Ditcher started. You know, we all got involved with it. It's to help some of the NFL players that, you know, they weren't most fortunate to make all that money and the retirement and stuff like that. And what we do, we step in and help these guys to pay some of these guys don't get the retirement. They didn't make the kind of money. We pay for the maybe the mortgage, the insurance, it helps a problem. You know, they have to come up with some money or something like that. They didn't make it, so we insist them in. They got so much pride, you know. They don't want to go out here and ask people and stuff like that. So we have a way of just, you know, helping them out. And that's why that came about, the Great on Great, because helping everybody, and we just started doing this fundraisers. I think Port Ryan got involved about five years ago.
Right.
And that's what we do, you know. And we got all kinds of stuff going on. You know, the Port Ryan Appreciation Day, you know, we have is celebrate one of the biggest days of the country for sports, and that's the Super Bowl, February the 7th, 2016, you know.
Right.
And they give the fans the opportunity also, if you go out and buy the products and stuff like that, they donate a portion of their proceeds to the Great on Great Assistance Fund. And people have an opportunity to also win some money, you know. They can win $3,500. They can win $3,500, you know. And also, their name will be entered into the contest, and they can win also $3,500 worth of Port Ryan gifts and stuff. I mean, like that for the rest of the year, for a whole year.
That's incredible.
Incredible. And also, we donate. I mean, we're gonna have auction off some stuff, and we're gonna also give away some footballs and stuff like that, autographs.
And if you'd like to learn more, play the new sack, the quarterback game, you can go to www.porkrinds.com. Also, to learn more about the Gridiron Greats Assistance Fund, you can go to www.gridirongreats.org. Whenever anyone sits back and says, well, could the player of yesteryear play today? Bobby Bell could play today, as could the entire Kansas City Chiefs defense. You'd be the number one seed going in. So, Bobby.
I'd like to be the number one seed.
I know you would be.
I get a day off.
I'd say that you get a week off. Let's see.
Yeah.
That's what
we went to the Super Bowl. We didn't get no days off. We had to play them all.
Yeah, you had to play them straight. But you were the first ever, quote, wild card to ever win it. So, and you did it. And so now Peyton gets a week off. Peyton only has to play three games in 6 weeks to win it.
That's right.
That's not bad.
And you know what? I think right now, like the Kansas City Chiefs, they beat Oakland yesterday. But we're sitting in a great, great situation now with Kansas City. It's a possibility that they can go back this year.
There is a distinct possibility. They've won 10 in a row.
And they're going on the road. Yeah. They got to go play Houston, you know. And,
I've got to ask.
It's nothing wrong with playing every week, you know. No. You don't get rusted, man.
No. I got to ask you one quick one because I know I have to let you go. But as a guy who played off the edge and could get to the quarterback, what do you think of my old friend Tom Bahali?
Oh, he's awesome, man. He is awesome. I talk to him. I watch him. You know, hey, man, he's unbelievable. He's quick. And I like the way he's playing. He's coming back, you know. Now he's getting in good shape. We got a lot of the guys coming back that was hurt, you know. And, you know, we had Jamal Charles got hurt, and everybody thought we were going to go into the tank head first, you know. And we lost five games, you know. Yeah. And the guy, the five games that we lost, you know, we were still in the ball game. We should never let Denver beat us here because we had them on the ropes. And we lost some close game. Now the team is playing great defense, and Alex Smith is controlling the ball. And we got some good running backs. We got three running backs, man. They can knock 100 yards off of you easy, man. And that's what's happening. We're running the ball good, and we're playing great defense. And now, as long as we're doing that, we're going to be all right. And what I like about it is that they are playing great ball now. And they had the worst part of the season was is way out back months ago, you know. Yeah. And this is a good time where you got to start playing your best stuff, and this is good. This is where you got to peak. Win the Super Bowl, this is where you got to peak at, man.
Yeah, no one knows it better than you. Thank you so much for the time today. I think the audience loved hearing from you. Thank you, Bobby.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Bobby Bell, one of the true legends of the game. We've been fortunate. We've been able to get some really great former players on the show along the way. Obviously, Jack Ham, my broadcast partner, we've obviously talked so much about Penn State football. But Andy Russell, Icky Woods, we had Lem Barney on last year. We've been able to get some really great former players on the show. Bobby Bell is one of the truly great players in the history of the game. I mean, I realize you have to go back to the 60s and 70s to retrace the steps. And for the younger people in our audience, you don't remember Bobby Bell playing, and that's fine. But take some time, and you know, I don't care whether it's Google or Wikipedia, whatever. Just go look up Bobby Bell. Take a moment. You'll find out that they're the greats of the game. Set a standard, even though we talk about the great athlete of today and so forth. LeBron James is bigger than life. Steph Curry might be the best shooter I've ever seen. I will say that. Steph Curry might be the best shooter I've ever seen in this game. And I thought Pete Maravich was a great shooter, but not like Steph Curry. But there are certain guys that set a standard before other guys came along. I was mentioning earlier, David Thompson and Elgin Baylor were both Michael Jordan before Michael Jordan. LeBron's a little different body type than most guys. I mean, so he is different in that way. Bobby Bell was Lawrence Taylor before Lawrence Taylor. As much as Taylor, in a lot of ways revolutionized the game because of that speed off the edge. But Bobby Bell was an outstanding outside linebacker. Take some time, look it up. You know, and you'll see that some guys were the guy before somebody else. Now, the game's changed, obviously, a little bit over time. But great players, I've been of the opinion, the great players of today could have played in yesteryear, and the great players of yesteryear could have played today because they just had either that natural ability, that athleticism, that instinct that carries and crosses over from era to era. He's one of those guys. Very special. And I think a lot of people are going to kick out of the long snapping part, which if you're a long snapper, by the way, in the NFL, you can carve out a dozen years, right? And you don't get hit. All right, one more hour to go on the show. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We head to the bottom of the hour, top of the hour. News is next on News Radio 1070 WKOK.